America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. By honoring your sacred vocation of nursing, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. At Grand Canyon University, our online RN to BSN, MSN, or DNP degree programs allow you to balance online coursework with local in-person clinical, practicum, or immersion hours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Tonight, third accused in the ongoing ambulance trial, businessman Richard Jagpa has been recounting how he declared war on the Attorney General for betraying him. He also disclosed that at one point in the case, he approached the Attorney General and suggested he is made a prosecution witness when the AG told him he could not file a process to terminate the case against him. He contended in open court that that betrayal by Godfred Yabo Adami made him angry and pushed him to declare war against the Attorney General. On day three of his cross-examination by prosecution, Richard Jagpa says he refused Godfred Dami's explanation that he is a collateral damage in the trial. Latif Idrisu was in court for us and joins me in studio. Latif, today's case, cross-examination, focused largely on WhatsApp chat between Richard Jagpa and Godfred Yabo Adami, submitted by the AG, earlier in court. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, that's correct. So, if you recall, at the last sitting, the Attorney General office attempted to tender something into evidence. That was the full WhatsApp chat, according to the prosecution, between Richard Jagpa and Godfred Yabo Adami. The lawyers for Ato Forsen and Jagpa objected to that evidence. And so today, the trial judge had to make a ruling, which she did, and gave reasons why she admitted that into evidence, that for the interest of reciprocity and the fact that a portion of this WhatsApp chat had already been tendered into evidence by Richard Jagpa himself. And on the day it was being tendered into evidence, Richard Jagpa had told the court that this is not the full WhatsApp chat, but what I'm presenting to the court is what is relevant to the ongoing case.
Okay.
Based on those two instances, the judge deemed it fit and right to admit
evidence. This could be the full chat that he himself alluded to earlier.
Exactly.
And so this has to be accepted. Well, the prosecution, what was that? The focus of the prosecution on the 68 chat Richard Jagpa is said to have had or sent to Godfred Yabo Adami.
So that was essentially the focus of prosecution today. Delve deep into the WhatsApp chat between Godfred Yabo Adami and Richard Jagpa. The AG sought to make the point that Godfred Yabo Adami and Richard Jagpa, or Godfred Yabo Adami himself, never arranged for a meeting between himself and Richard Jagpa. And that claims by Richard Jagpa that Godfred Yabo Adami arranged that meeting between himself and Jagpa at the residence of Jagpa's cousin, that is the Supreme Court judge, is not true. And that Richard Jagpa only appeared, and those are the words of the prosecution, that Richard Jagpa only appeared at his cousin's residence and met the Attorney General there. Richard Jagpa says that is not true.
Okay.
It was an arranged meeting, and his cousin was the one who called him, that the Attorney General says he has a meeting with him at his residence and called him to come, and he honored that invitation by the Attorney General.
So what really prompted his declaration of war on the AG?
Yeah, so if you recall, Richard Jagpa, this is not the first time he said it in open court, had said that the Attorney General, Godfred Yabo Adami, had promised him that when it gets to the stage of no case submission, he would let Richard Jagpa walk as a free man. The AG, according to Richard Jagpa, betrayed him. And that was before they met at his cousin's residence. And that was why, when they met at Unikolindi's house, he got angry at the Attorney General and told him that you promised me, we had a deal, I had given you documents. And he spoke to those documents he had sent on WhatsApp to the Attorney General, which today prosecution said the Attorney General didn't use it anyway.
Those because documents, the Attorney General filed those documents
prior to Jagpa sending it. And Jagpa's defense is that, well, I had sent it, the Attorney General requested for it. He also requests for other documents which I had sent. It is up to him to use which documents he preferred. It doesn't negate the fact that I sent him documents and he received those documents.
It's quite interesting, in that process he also mentioned Trojan horse, that one of his, some of the documents he sent in as a Trojan horse.
Exactly. So all those documents he sent to the Attorney General, according to Richard Japa, is like a Trojan horse, because he knew in dealing with that is, I'm going to say what exactly Richard Japa said.
Okay.
That's in his dealings with the members of this current administration, he knows that they do not honor their words.
Okay.
And so he sent those documents so he could testify in court today and make reference to them that indeed he sent documents to the Attorney General.
What did the AG's department say in relation to that declaration?
Well, so according to Tia Yeboah, who is the Deputy Attorney General, he says this declaration of war by Richard Japa is rather unfortunate, and they are going to take the necessary steps to make sure that the Attorney General himself and maybe the rest of the department stay safe.
Tell us about the proceedings today, your initial reaction.
Oh, today that has been a chapter two, isn't it? Tuesday was chapter one, today chapter two. You witnessed it. You heard matters. You make your own judgment out of what you heard. You heard issues about someone operating in the underworld and someone using his legal skills, declaration of war against the Attorney General. All this is came up. So, interesting proceedings.
What do you make of the fact that the Attorney General rejected an appeal he made to him to make him a witness when he said you couldn't get him something he had requested for?
That is the prerogative of Attorney General, and we use witnesses that we think will further our cause. There was no decision to use him as a witness. The only decision was to use a witness that we have penciled to call. And so I think it was out of no moment to us, use him as a witness.
But with the nature
you were in court, we showed some documents to him just to ensure that he answers certain questions. I think the proceeding for today has met our expectations. We tendered what we had on our phone, 100%. If he has others, he knows what to do, because he's still in the box.
What do you also make that he make the point that there was never a plea bargain discussion between himself and the Attorney General?
We'll get there. They are documentary. We'll get there. Today we'll go to a certain point. So come to the chapter 3 and you hear all those things.
And how are the claim that he has entered the war on Attorney General?
I think it's quite unfortunate, to be frank with you, because that declaration of war, according to him, whether he is acquitted or whether he's convicted, he's declared that war. So he has put us on notice. And so the needed steps will be taken.
Oh, wow. If indeed he said it to the Attorney General at his cousin's house, he should be aware of that already, not in open court.
AG has not admitted such a thing. And so now that we've heard it in open court, you will take the necessary steps.
As in security-wise for the Attorney General?
We take the necessary steps.
What would that step entail?
That step, when we take it, you get to know it.
That is the Deputy AG. I mean, in court, we understand Felix Ofosu-Kwakye also spoke on behalf of the first and third accused. What did he say?
Yeah, so according to Felix Kwakye Ofosu, though we see Richard Japa in the witness box, it is the character of the Attorney General that is on trial.
The AG attempted to douse the potency of Mr. Japa's testimony, but he stuck to his guns. He repeated some of the things that he has said before that you in court have observed. He insisted that his initial contact with the AG was limited to explaining his side of the story to him, because he believed that the AG was not fully aware of the facts and therefore may have been mistaken in adding him to the people that were being prosecuted. So he thought that an engagement with the AG, at which engagement he had the opportunity to spell out the full facts and furnish the AG with supplementary documents, was going to lead to the conclusion that perhaps he had no case to answer. That engagement quickly mothballed into an effort by the AG to conduct himself unethically and urge Mr. Japa to do things that were unethical. Indeed, Mr. Japa disclosed that it was the AG's responsibility as the chief law enforcement officer of the republic to know that an engagement with a represented accused person on the blind side of his lawyers was unethical.
How damaging would you say it would be for Mr. Japa, having said in open court that he had declared war on the Attorney General,
How damaging would that be for his case going forward? These are serious issues.
We get the sense that the Attorney General wants to see that Mr. Japa is doing this in retribution for what he believed to be the Attorney General's failure to keep his part of the bargain. But the point is that Mr. Japa insisted that he has not said anything that hasn't happened. If I have discussions with you and we agree that you will do something and you fail to do it, and I come out to say that we agreed that we will do this and didn't do it, I have not said anything that is not true. If it were the case that Mr. Japa was saying things that have been proven to be untrue by the court, then you could say that some damage has been done to his reputation. But as of now, as far as he's concerned, he has not said anything that did not happen.
So that's Felix Ofosu Kwache there. Let's bring in a private legal practitioner, Samson Ladi Ayanini, who joins us on the telephone lines. Now, grateful to you, Samson, for joining. First off, what's your own interpretation of what happened in court today?
As we indicated the last time, our law that governs the admissibility or non-admissibility of evidence, the Evidence Act, is very clear that evidence that is relevant is admissible, particularly in Section 51. So they have been able to make the point about the fact that this is a relevant evidence, the WhatsApp conversations, and have succeeded in getting it admitted. I would have been surprised to confess to you that it would not have been admitted, because the evidence of the accused person about the recording, the secret tape, you know, has been admitted. And therefore, I think it would be too much for anybody to have expected that the judge would not admit this as well. And as we discussed the last time, the law talks about how, you know, character can be impugned to affect the credibility of a witness under qualified circumstances in the law. So evidence of good character can be used to support the credibility of a witness. And the other way is also possible under qualified terms, except that the law would require that you would have put that into the evidence already before you can speak to it in trying to either affirm the good character of the person or damage the character, the bad character of the person somewhat. So I think it's good for them that it's been admitted. Yes, that is good for the accused that theirs was also admitted the last time.
But there's also the issue about the weight that could be placed on these sort of evidence.
Yes, that's the job of the judge. The judge will now evaluate the evidence and come to a finding of fact. All the talking, and some of it quite irrelevant noise in the media, will not matter as far as evaluating the evidence is concerned in the courtroom. But you and I cannot attempt to do that on radio for a matter that is ongoing because of the law's prohibitions, including the potential of contempt.
Okay.
So that is the province of the judge. But after everything has come to an end, the judge will then retire in looking at how to come to the judgment, make a decision whether this WhatsApp, you know, chat that you have submitted and have used it for your cross-examination purposes, to what extent does it serve the purpose you put it in? This thing that you brought into the court as evidence, to what extent does it support your case or negate the existence of a fact, and so on? To what extent does it impugn something that the prosecution intends to do, which must go or inure to your favor? All of that will be in the province for the judge to make.
Now, for purposes of education, how will the tape and WhatsApp chats, which have been presented in court, help this case, since the main issue is about someone causing financial loss to the state?
So, criminal trials, the burden to discharge is proof beyond reasonable doubt of the allegations or charges made against the accused person. By law, if there is a small doubt, it is supposed to lead or inure to the benefit of the accused person and potentially go into leading to their acquittal or discharge, so to speak. So, to the extent that they are seeking to use this to suggest the things they are saying, that somebody suggested that you were not the target, or that you perhaps that you had done nothing wrong, and so on and so forth, at the risk of seeking to get into the merit of the matter, this is the kind of thing that is going to happen. And the judge will have to make that assessment. I don't think it is right for anybody to seek to dismiss that these things are not important.
Okay.
They are important.
And now, some also say the admission of the tape and WhatsApp chat between the two, that's the AG and Richard Jackpa, is probably turning the case into a trial of the Attorney General. Is that how you see it?
There's a bit that we are hearing reported from the court which is unwarranted, and I'll not say what exactly that is, but there's a bit that is reported from the proceedings that I find to be irrelevant and may not be useful to the entire proceedings. Declarations of war and all of that, the judge will clearly not take any of that into consideration because they will not impinge on the matter itself. So what will be important will be if you say that you have clearly indicated that I am not guilty, I have not done any wrong, and yet you are prosecuting me, that will be a different case altogether.
Quite interesting. I mean, it's an interesting space we are in. So the AG's department is also saying that, well, once he says there's a declaration of war, they're also going to take steps. I mean, as a lawyer, I'm sure you've encountered these things. What does it mean if they say, well, we're also going to take steps to see what we'll do?
It's about what the declaration of war amounts to. But in the courtroom is the prosecution strategy. It is defense, the lawyers also strategy in prosecuting the matter. And it's on the basis of evidence, nothing more, nothing less. Threats, if they are issued and they are considered to be threats, can be dealt with on that level separately and differently.
Okay.
And we have to be reminded that actually threats of harm can be a criminal offense on its own, just as threat of death can actually attract a penalty in the nature of a second degree felony. So it's not something that anybody should be toying with. But the important thing to note is that some of those things or these things will not matter in the examination of the evidence as to whether or not somebody has caused financial loss or not.
Okay. Grateful to you, Lawyer Samson Yadi Ladi Ayenini there. Well, there was near chaos in Parliament as the ambulance procurement trial is taking a toll on the business of Parliament as the NDC MPs vow to scuttle proceedings whenever their leader has to attend court. Today, the NDC MPs boycotted a large part of the proceedings until their minority leader returned from court only to enter the chamber and raise issues of quorum. Let's take you live to Parliament and I speak to our correspondent, Kweku Asante, who has been monitoring proceedings. Kweku, first, at what time did the House start sitting today?
The House was expected to sit today at 10 a.m. The last time they adjourned yesterday, they were expected to start proceedings at 10 a.m. That is what the standing orders provide. But they did sit around 3 p.m., that is more than 5 hours after they had scheduled an advertisement that they were going to start proceedings. That mainly because the minority had indicated that they are not going to be in the chamber anytime the minority leader is in court. And also the majority themselves, they have 138 MPs, but they did not have the numbers to be able to push for sitting to start. And so shouldn't they start around 3 p.m., but even at the time, the numbers on the floor were not really anything to go about.
So what business were they conducting before the NDC MPs came in to raise the issue of quorum?
So there is a new bill that is being sponsored by the Ministry of Roads and Highways, led by Francis Asensobachi, the new minister, and that was being prosecuted. In fact, at the time I did my counting on the floor, there was not a single NDC MP there. A number of them were around, they were in the precincts of parliament, around the coffee shop area and all that. But there were just about 15 NPP MPs on the floor at the time. That ordinarily does not meet the quorate number. It is not enough for parliament to proceed to do business. But as it is in parliament, if no one is on the floor to raise an issue of quorum, then the House will proceed to do business. But just around 4 p.m., 4:30, the minority leader's trial in court concluded for the day. And then I saw the minority leader walking. And then he walked in with a few of his colleagues who then came in to say that the House did not have quorum to transact business. So listening to James Kluchaveji, a former deputy minority leader, MP for K2 North, raised the issue of quorum. He had a response from the majority CFWEP and also what the deputy speaker was presiding, they say.
And I believe that my time is not different from that of the speaker. And it's now 3:57. It's far more than 10 minutes. Mr. Speaker, the standing order, order 64. Order 64, 3. No, order 64, 3. No, 4, says that the person presiding shall direct the clerk at table to cause a bell to be rung. Continue the business of the House for a period of 10 minutes. Mr. Speaker, D, C, direct the clerk at table to conduct a head count of members present. And if there is still no quorum, suspend sitting of the House for a period of not more than 1 hour. Mr. Speaker, can you direct the clerk at table to conduct a head count?
But they were recognized. No, we must correct that.
Honorable Chief Whip.
You were recognized. When you walk in, you are recognized. And when you walk in and you got up to speak, you are recognized. Let that go on the records. What is that?
I don't know the time you are using. My time is not up yet. I'm monitoring my time. So when my time is up, I will obviously ask the clerk at table to conduct it. So you hold on. I'm going by my time, and I'm going by the time over there. So honorable, let's proceed.
Yeah, but the 10 minutes is up.
Well, Kweku, we understand the House nearly degenerated into chaos when the deputy speaker presiding refused to call for a count.
Well, yes, if you look at the standing orders indicate that when a person raised an issue of quorum, an issue having to do with the time would have to be looked at. And so the Speaker of Parliament would have to order that a bell be rung in the House for MPs who may be around to come into the chamber so that they can be counted for quorum for business to take place. The bells did rung, and after 10 minutes, the former deputy minority leader, James Kluchaveji, was on his feet, saying that the 10 minutes had elapsed. And that is when you heard the deputy speaker say that he was using his own time, and as per him, the 10 minutes had not reached. And this is where the House nearly degenerated into chaos, because James Kluchaveji would have none of that, insisting that the speaker could not have his own different time. Listen.
Mr. Speaker,
my time is not up to 10 minutes.
That the bell was rung. When the bell was rung, we all heard it. If you are telling this House or me that you are using your time,
I'm left with 2 minutes.
I can do with one clause before the two minutes. There's no law working. This standing order regulates the conduct of the House. If our own standing order says it, why? No. No, I'm...
fundamental issue, a constitutional issue, and obviously nobody can ignore it. I'm saying the time I call the bell to be rung, I'm left with 2 minutes. I don't know how you calculated it. So please allow me to use my time.
The Speaker, clause 44, there's no advertised amendment.
Honorable leader, we will come to you. 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes cannot spoil the whole thing. I'm saying I'm using my time. Mr. What about somebody also gets up and says that the time is not?
Mr. Speaker, the framers of the 1992 Constitution never contemplated that a speaker will have a special time different from the time.
I'm using this time.
Mr. Speaker, we were in the chamber and we were all watching the time when I made. Don't forget, Mr. Speaker, I use Article 102.
Honorable Clerk at table. Mr. Speaker,
we are not asking you now.
Clerk at table.
Mr. Speaker, we are not asking you
please
now. Please
count the members.
No, Mr. Speaker, that is wrong, Mr. Speaker. When we made the application, that is when the time starts. The bell was rung. You said it's left with 2 minutes. You are now saying they should go and count. Isn't it the case that?
But that is the procedure.
No, I'm saying well, the point we are making is that the 10 minutes have passed.
But so how will I know that the number here is not up to 10?
Mr. Speaker,
we have to count.
You let them do the counting.
So, table.
Mr. Speaker, clause 44, no advertised amendment. I assume.
So, Kweku, with all of this, you know, trial ongoing and the minority saying that as long as their leader is going to go, they won't come to the house. People claim they're only using that to frustrate business of government. How do they react to that?
Well, James Mutasegi is the one who sort of led the minority crusade on the floor today. I did catch up with him after the house eventually suspended and adjourned because there was simply no numbers. He says, but they are right in solidarizing with their leader. We also heard from the MP for Kimtampo North, Joseph Kwame Nkrumah, who said that the procedure that the state has been adopting in going after the minorities that is simply not right, and they are right in standing by their leader.
All right, so that's how Parliament really reacted to this whole trial in which the minority leader is expected to be in court. They say anytime he will be in court, they will also boycott Parliament. We'll keep an eye on that. That's it for Top Story. Up next is Newsnight.